Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce joining us in studio this afternoon. What have you got for us, Bruce?
Well, I'm going to start by reading the poem that inspired the title of this. It's A. E. Housman's famous and moving poem to an athlete dying young. The time you won your town the race, we cheered you through the marketplace. Man and boy stood cheering by, and home we brought you shoulder high. Today the road, all runners come, shoulder high, we bring you home, and set you at your threshold down, townsman of a stiller town. Smart lad, to slip betimes away from fields where glory does not stay. And early though the laurel grows, it withers quicker than the rose. Eyes the shady night has shut cannot see the record cut, and silence sounds no worse than shears after earth has stopped the ears. Now you will not swell the rout of lads that wore their honors out, runners whom renown outran, and the name died before the man. So set before its echoes fade the fleet foot on the sill of shade, and hold to the low lintel up the still defended challenge cup. And round that early laureled head will flock to gaze the strengthless dead, and find unwithered on its curls the garland briefer than a girl's. It's one of my favorite poems of all time.
Absolutely.
And I love Housman anyway, but it really sets this story up, this essay up. It's by a person named Justin Hudson, to the athlete dying young, but he has in parentheses between the and athlete black, documenting and mythologizing Len Bias and Ben Wilson. Now, people of a certain age will certainly know Len Bias's story. He played in the ACC at the same time as Jordan. There were many people that felt they were of equal talent, that one was not better than the other. He played for Lefty Driesell at Maryland. Mike Krzyzewski said that he thought he was at the same level as Jordan. And he was the second overall pick in the NBA draft coming out of Maryland. And he was chosen by the Celtics, and before he ever played a game with the Celtics, he died of a cocaine overdose. And the media bought into the idea that this had been this young man's first experience. This was some tragedy. Someone had given him this, and he didn't know what he was doing. But that didn't prove to be true, that he had experimented with it before. This gave great impetus to getting the Congress to pass Reagan's war on drugs, which in retrospect we've seen has been one of the greatest disasters in the nation's history. Part of the problem was that they kept holding up, this is what happens to inner city black kids if we don't do something about the drug dealers. And they equated crack cocaine, the amount of crack cocaine that got you a stiff sentence, with the same amount of powdered cocaine. I don't know anything about crack cocaine. I was in the music business a long time. I've seen a lot of people use the other kind. And I get that they're dangerous things that you shouldn't be doing. But a white kid at an Ivy League college caught with some powdered cocaine gets a slap on the wrist. A young black person getting caught with crack cocaine gets a 30-year sentence. And our jails started to fill up. And we started this high school to prison pipeline among a lot of inner city youth. When Ben Wilson was murdered, it was a tragedy, as all murders are. He was probably the best basketball player to come out of Illinois. One of the Hardaways talked about how that's just who he wanted to be, Ben Wilson. And the year before, and he lived in a middle class, black middle class neighborhood in Chicago, and was killed in an altercation. He was shot before he played his senior year. And this was a kid that was on everybody's list of would be one of the best basketball players. He was projected to be, a first-round pick, a number one pick, a lottery pick. If they had the lottery, they don't even know. But when he died, the reaction of Mayor Harold Washington in Chicago was to have this huge crackdown on gangs, believing that this was gang-related. Probably wasn't. Were the people who shot him in a gang? That's possible. But this wasn't a gang shootout. And it brought this huge crackdown. And I can remember that even Jim Brown was brought in to talk. I remember that. It's not in the article, but I remember that. And one of the consequences of that then was that anybody who was arrested for a crime and they had been involved in a gang was getting also treated very differently. One of the people who was responsible, probably the shooter, Ben Wilson, was a young man named, his last name was Dixon, the grandson of the great blues great, Willie Dixon. Mm. This guy's mother was a jazz singer. These were people that did not come from horrible situations. And so we started to get this mythology that Len Bias and Ben Wilson would all be alive because they were good guys who weren't really going to do anything wrong in their lives. It's those other people.
Right.
Harold Washington said he was going to make such a deal out of this that it would make the thugs cry. Well, when you start using that kind of language and you politicize these kinds of things rather than try and figure out why they're happening, it really became absurd. And the two movies that I'm talking about, Benji and Without Bias, are 30 by 30, older 30 by 30, 30 for 30s, 30 by 30. Right. 30 for 30 productions of ESPN. And they're probably, for many of these critics, a much better explanation of what happened. They point out flaws in both of them. But what I'm interested in talking to the author about is how 30 for 30 changed the way that people looked at these situations. Because before that, the media was just completely complicit with these myths about bias and about Ben Wilson. We don't know that Ben Wilson, who could apparently be an large and intimidating presence, didn't get into it with the guy that shot him. It doesn't mean you deserve to get shot, but he wasn't an innocent bystander. It was an argument that escalated and got out of control. So what's the real issue? What are high school kids doing carrying handguns?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the real issue. What starts that? Is it fear? Is it fear that if you don't have one and you're not a gangbanger, that you need one? I mean, I'm not trying to project what any of this means. I'm just trying to put sort of a framework around this. But the what's really interesting is that basketball is the sport that I think people most think of when they think about African Americans succeeding in the sports world. Obviously, it happens in every sport, any of the four major sports. But the NBA has a certain urban connection that the other sports don't always have to that extent. We think of basketball as an urban game. We've talked about this for 7 or 8 years now, going back to books, you know, things about Dolph Schayes and the early days of Claire B and basketball and the city, and it was a New York, Philadelphia, LA, Chicago kind of game. And so if we begin as a society to believe that all of the people who live in those places are a certain way, think a certain way, behave a certain way, then we buy into these narrow mythologies and it completely skews the truth. So what I'm really looking forward to doing when we talk to the various authors is have them go into a little bit more critical depth about how the films actually work. The reason I've wanted to talk about them ahead of time was to give people an idea of what is really happening, because these films were done through research. They weren't done through reading the newspaper. They talked to people that were involved. Some of the young people that were involved in these crimes went on to lead very productive lives after paying their debt to society. And some of the Wilson's parents were able to successfully sue on his projected possible income. But what they all wanted to do was not let the deaths of these athletes become, they didn't want to become martyrs. They wanted them to become examples of what can happen when you make bad decisions. And, you know, if you OD on cocaine, you've made a bad decision. There's no doubt about that. But is that bad decision just that? Is it who you hang out with? Is it who you're taking advice from? Is it listening to peers tell you that this is going to make you a better person? Is it a situation where sometimes the peer pressure is so great that people wanting to hitch a ride? You're going to be a star. You're going to make millions and millions of dollars. I'm going to go on that ride with you. And I've heard so many athletes talk about how hard it was to jettison some of those friends that became parasitical for them. And I think in both of these cases, we can see some of that.
Mm. Yeah, both incredibly sad stories, and I think made worse because they were portrayed in what, frankly, was the lazy and simple way to portray them.
Yes, exactly. Lazy is the primary way to describe it. People got told that this was the first time, it was terrible, the first time Len Bias ever tried this, and he died. They did the research, it wasn't true. And they could have done the research then. But because they saw it as a tragedy and they didn't want to diminish his stature in any way, they actually ended up hurting people rather than helping them. And that, you know, we think about all the ball players in the 50s and 60s that got away with rampant adultery and womanizing and drinking and carousing and barroom fighting, all that. Because as long as they give the reporter a good quote after the game, Mickey could do whatever he wanted to do. I mean, that guy was my boyhood idol. So I'm not trying to run Mickey Mantle down. But there was so much of that, and I think ESPN, when they started that 30 for 30, really changed that. And I'm sure that there were a lot of athletes that were not happy with ESPN, but you know, they and God knows they have their flaws, especially now. But that was. That was important, and the early HBO documentaries, too.
These stories all from the wonderful new collection, Sporting Realities.
Yes, critical readings of the sports documentary edited by Samantha N. Shepherd and our friend Travis Vogan. So the plan is, next week we're going to have Brian Daldorf read some great poems that he sent me. A friend of ours from Kansas has been on the show before. And then I'll make arrangements with the other three authors to get them on from this book. And then we'll have Travis and Samantha hopefully both back to wrap it all up for us, because we could spend the entire rest of this year going one by one. But I thought these were the three that would most resonate with our people, our peeps.
Our peeps, indeed. Great. We'll look forward to it. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, sir.